I'm ready to go if we are, so.
Okay.
Great. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our June 10th Bay Area UWASI Approval Authority meeting.
This is the Brown Act notice. Due to the COVID-19 health emergency and to protect Approval Authority board members, regional government employees, and the public, the Alameda County Office of Emergency Services is closed. However, Approval Authority members will be participating in the meeting remotely at the same extent as if they were physically present. The Approval Authority will take public comment on each item on the agenda. Persons addressing the Approval Authority on an agenda item shall confine their remarks to that particular agenda item. It is also the Approval Authority policy to include general public comment as a separate agenda item at the conclusion of the meeting. Members of the public may only address matters within the Approval Authority's jurisdiction and that have not appeared elsewhere on the agenda for that meeting. Best practices are to call from a quiet location and, when called upon, speak clearly and slowly. Alternatively, you may submit public comment by email to uasimt.dem@sfgov.org. And here's today's agenda.
Madam Chair, should I call the roll?
Yes, thank you. I'm sorry. Thank you.
City and County of San Francisco.
Present, Mary Ellen Carroll.
County of Alameda.
Assistant Sheriff Tom Madigan sitting in for Undersheriff Lucia. Good morning, everybody.
City and County of San Francisco.
Present, Eric Artisero, San Francisco Fire Department.
City of Oakland. City of San Jose.
Deputy Director Jay McCamus, sitting in for Ray Reardon.
County of Santa Clara.
County of Santa Clara, Dana Reed, present.
County of Contra Costa.
Assistant Sheriff Tom Chalk.
County of Marin.
Good morning, Lieutenant Gordon.
County of Monterey.
Gary Millay, present.
County of San Mateo. And County of Sonoma.
Here, Chris Godley.
Madam Chair, we do have a quorum.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. Our item number 2 is approval of the minutes. Do we have any changes, edits, comments from the Approval Authority members regarding our minutes of the last meeting? Okay, I don't see any. Do we have anyone who would like to have public comment about the minutes? Do we see anyone?
Yes. Sorry, I'm trying to unmute. Mr. Beekman, just a moment, please.
Okay.
Mr. Beekman, can you unmute your mic, please?
Yes, I've just unmuted.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Beekman.
Hi. Thank you. Blair Beekman here. Thank you for another Bay UWASI meeting. And you're on a new app. We took a little bit of navigating to get to this app. I'm here. Hope you can see my hand when I raise it. Thanks for the meeting today. My normal, hopefully regular speech, that, you know, I'm always interested in how the minutes, meeting minutes process can have a few extra sentences and a few extra words to describe, you know, the thoughts and ideas of both the Bayuwas, the approval authority, and the public in the meeting minutes process. To offer those, to learn to offer a few more words, a few more sentences can really just enhance the entire public process altogether. And what the UN used to call quality of life practices that we were all trying to work towards before COVID-19, I hope, just a reminder of those good practices and to always be looking for open democratic practices. It's important. And with that said, you know, I spoke at the last meeting. I kind of gave my heart and soul to ideas and thoughts and what could be good practices. And for one reason or another, either my phone was bad or perhaps there's some sort of censoring device within Bayuwasi, my words were really garbled for a lot of the speeches and words that I offered. I mean, I offered written word. I offered my own heart and feelings about things. My words will come through in this upcoming session, naturally, as always. I mean, I always try to be positive and hopeful. And it's a comment to how we judge our future system and how we use it. And my words will come out more in this session, but we just have to be wary. I gave my best shot last time, and I don't want to be censored for that in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. So we need a motion.
So moved.
Excuse me, who was that?
Monterey County.
Monterey, and a second.
Second, Erica Artiseros.
Thank you. I'll now call the roll. So when I call out your jurisdiction, please state your full name. City and County of San Francisco.
I was on mute. I'm sorry.
Thanks.
Mary Ellen Carroll, aye. Sorry.
County of Alameda.
Assistant Sheriff Tom Madigan, aye.
City and County of San Francisco.
Erica Artiseros, aye.
City of Oakland. Oh. City of Oakland. City of San Jose.
Jay McAmis, aye.
County of Santa Clara. County of Santa Clara. County of Contra Costa.
Assistant Sheriff Tom Chuck, aye.
County of Marin.
Lieutenant Pierre Henke, aye.
Thank you. County of Monterey.
Gary Millay, aye.
County of San Mateo.
Good morning, Director John Kovach, aye.
And County of Sonoma.
Chris Scottley, aye.
Okay, the motion passes with 9 ayes and 2 absent. Agenda item 3, we'll move on to the general manager's report.
Thank you. In my report, I have 3 action items that would need a vote for from the board. But starting off with a little background, in our master MOU and bylaws, every year the GM is required to produce an annual report, a management team organization chart, work plans of the management team, and a management team budget. So I'll begin with Appendix A, the annual report. For the sake of brevity, I'm not going to go into page by page, but just touch on a few highlights. You know, this year, the pandemic created a number of challenges for us all. You know, for the management team, we had the challenges of operating virtually. We also had the challenges of ongoing threats facing the nation and the region. We had an increase of cybersecurity ransomware. We've seen election security concerns, and we've seen a rise in domestic terrorism. Also, we had the challenges of ongoing EOC activations and aligning staffs and reallocating staff duties and obligations and workload. We also had the challenge on onboarding new employees virtually and getting them acquainted to the region as well as, you know, the UWASI grant. However, we've seen a number of successful accomplishments. This year, we leveraged three additional grants and increased our grant revenue in 1 year 34%, which is the most that we ever did in over 10 years. We completed our three-year integrated preparedness plan for the Bay Area Training and Exercise Program and completed the tools and templates from lessons learned from our regional DSW programs. We developed the Alert the Bay website, which links local mass notification systems. We developed recommendations for the Bay Area CPOD planning process, which is aligns to our project funded by the RCPG grant, the Regional Catastrophic Preparedness Grant. We conducted community awareness briefings that align to our projects under the TVTP grant, the Terrorism Targeting Violence and Terrorism Prevention Grant. And then we developed the Program Management Office as required by the Security the Cities grant. So overall, it was a very successful year for the management team. Moving on to the Appendix B, our management team organization chart. This is an action item, and it is required that I produce this under the bylaws. Our team is divided into the four grant streams, the UWASI grant, Securing the Cities grant, the TVTP grant, and the RCPGP grant. It is also divided functionality by the program, the programmatic side, the fiscal side, and then the admin side. And then aligned to that is our work plans that are attached as Appendix C. Our work plans are aligned to the four different types of grant streams. They also align to the 10 goals of the Bay Area UWASI. You know, from goal one, strengthening the fusion center, to goal three, protecting critical infrastructure. Goal three is enhancing cybersecurity. Goal four is strengthening emergency communication capabilities. Goal five, enhancing med and public health preparedness. Goal six, preventing violent extremists. Goal seven, enhancing community resilience. Goal eight, enhancing information and sharing collaborations. Goal nine, enhancing all hazard incident planning, response, and recovery capabilities. And goal 10 is the Homeland Security Exercise Evaluation and Training Program. Moving on to our budget, our management team budget, as we've done on an annual basis, our budget is divided into our various revenue sources. This year, we have four different types of grant streams. We have the UWASI grant, we have the RCPGP grant, we have the Security Cities grant, and then we have the TVTP grant. From all those grants, our revenue sources for the management team budget is 4.2 mil, which is 218,000 more from last year. Our expenditures are also divided into our personnel as well as our operating, and that is an increase of 4.64% increase from last year. And then moving on to our Appendix E, which is the future items of our tracking tool. Our next meeting is going to be in September, and we anticipate that this will be our first in-person meeting in Dublin. So we really look forward to meeting everyone in person. It's been a long time. The items on the tracking tool is that we will be discussing and approving our bylaws and our master MOU. They're expiring this year, and they need to be extended. The termination date is, well, it's every 3 years. Our legal counsel, Eric Kasher, will be presenting on the Brown Act updates. We will be discussing our national priority projects as well as our regional program updates. We'll have a discussion on our Virtual Security Operations Center, or VSOP, as well as the Alert the Bay project update. And then there will be a program update from the Bay RICS JPA, and then our fiscal will present a UWASI spending report. This concludes the GM report. If there's any questions, I'll be happy to take them. And as I mentioned, there are three action items. We will need approval for the work chart, our work plans, or the management team work plans, as well as the management team budget. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Craig. Do we have any questions from members on the general manager's report? I don't see any. And Sarah, I assume you're looking at the chat too in case anything comes up. All right. Public comment. Do we have anyone for public comment, Mary?
Chair, before you do public comment, I wanted to be aware that on my end, it says the chat is turned off.
Also, Madam Chair, Dana Reed here. I'm sorry, I got kicked off and had to rejoin. My official vote on the minutes, approval of the minutes for Santa Clara County, is an aye, but I'm back with you now. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm not sure what's, it says chat is turned off for this meeting, folks. Okay, so while the team deals with that, is just since we had that glitch, any other comments that people need to make, you will have to make them verbally, not in the chat. We're good right now. Okay, we'll go back to public comment.
Yes, and Madam Chair, a member of the public wishes to speak. Go ahead, Mr. Beekman, unmute your microphone, please.
Hi. Blair Beekman here. Thank you for this month's report. Just a reminder, I really try to work towards just positive, good ideals within the public process, and my words really try to go for the good stuff. So with that said, thank you for this report. My words from the last meeting tried to offer that I think with the ideas of equity and reimagine and open public policy ideas, housing rights issues, workers' rights issues, Medicare for all issues, I think there's a wide range of incredibly positive and hopeful things that are being worked on at the local level, and that can invite all parts of the community to the process. And it's inviting all those parts to the community process. That's how we address you know, the future of domestic violence. And we just invite them to something that's really hopeful and positive at this time. And, yeah, that's our future. It's not so much combating violent extremism and preventing violent extremism. You know, I feel it's those steps and it's those positive efforts. And that's the kind of words that got garbled in my words from last time. And I really think those words have to be emphasized in how we move forward in whatever we do. Thank you to the chair, to the general manager, I guess. I don't know his title. But for describing that, you know, it's still emergency services that should be first at this time, how we move forward. And the PVE and CVE can kind of be in the background. You have to update some things, yes. But, you know, those things need to be in the background compared to the good efforts of emergency services work. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other public comment on this item? Seeing none, we can move on to our next item. Thank you.
Marianne.
Oh, wait, we have to vote. I'm sorry. I can't wait till we go back to live and in person. It's very challenging. Okay. So we have, do we need to do three different votes or one on all three?
One on all three.
Okay. So this is on the overall UASI budget, the organizational chart, and the annual work plans.
Correct.
Assuming there is no changes to that, we can go ahead and ask for a motion to approve.
So moved, Monterey County.
Second by Santa Clara County, Dana Reed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Can you call roll?
Thank you. I'll call roll. City and County of San Francisco.
Mary Ellen Carroll, aye.
County of Alameda.
Assistant Sheriff Tom Madigan, aye.
City and County of San Francisco.
Eric Articeros, aye.
City of Oakland. City of San Jose.
Jane McCamus, aye.
County of Santa Clara.
Dana Reed, aye.
County of Contra Costa.
Assistant Sheriff Tom Chalk, aye.
County of Marin.
Lieutenant Pierre Hinkin, aye.
County of Monterey.
Gary Malay, aye.
County of San Mateo.
John Kowach, aye.
And County of Sonoma.
Chris Godley, aye.
All right, thank you. The motion passes with 10 ayes and one absent.
Thank you.
Moving on to agenda item 4 is Janelle Meyer, who will present a regional work group plan update.
Good morning, approval authority members. I'm here to present to you item 4. It's discussion only. So every year we come to you with an update on our UWASI regional work group annual plans. As Craig reviewed with you our job descriptions, a portion of our program team jobs are to manage and coordinate these work groups. The work groups, as most of you know, are where your staff engages with UWASI regional initiatives and projects. Work groups are created by the general manager to provide input to and support the Homeland Security goals that will be presented to you in the proposal guidance that Mary will talk about next. You can see in the item before you, A through G are the discipline-specific areas that our work groups are responsible for. And a sample of two of the work group annual plans is in this presentation as appendices. The others are posted on our website. You can see that the work plans include the goal areas, the 2021 initiatives, including national priority projects, and also how to engage with our training and exercise program. There is a project management or a program lead for each of the work groups, and that's noted in the annual plans. If you have any questions about the work groups, the plans, what we do for the full year, please reach out to any of the work group leads or anyone in the OWASI management team, and we can answer any questions. So that concludes my presentation on the annual plans for the work groups. It's kind of short and sweet. I'll take any questions now.
Any questions for Janelle? Okay, not seeing any. Do we have any public comment on this item?
Go ahead, Mr. Beekman, please unmute your mic and begin speaking.
Hi, I'll try to keep this short. It's the general manager position of Bay UWASI, Craig Zedzik. Sorry, I'm learning how to say those things. It's a learning experience for me. Thank you for your patience. I am slow and I'm just everyday public. Things are a little difficult for me. Thank you for your patience. For this item, I don't quite know if BayRICS items, if it's appropriate to talk about BayRICS stuff now, but as successful as the BayRICS program can now be and hopeful it is, what is the status? We had a meeting here a few years ago about a highway system that can be developed for broadband for everyday public during the time of an emergency. Just some sort of information channel, emergency channel. How is that progress going? I know with Verizon, you can have a series of patchwork emergency setup systems in place. And is that adequate? Is that enough? I know that's probably regular, but is there something extra we can do for that process to ensure and guarantee a good line of communication for everyday public in the time of emergency events? Thanks.
If there's no more public comment, we'll move on to agenda item 5, which is a presentation for Mary Landers on our UWASI project proposal guidance. And this is an action item.
Yes, thanks, Sarah. Good morning, Approval Authority members. Mary Landers from the management team. And the agenda item before you is an action item, as Sarah said. And we are pleased to present the annual project proposal guidance for the fiscal 2022 UWASI funding cycle. And the document that was in the packet is contains all the requirements and procedures for the FY22 subrecipient grant application. It includes national priority projects and the review and approval process. And with one exception, the timeline and the general approach to the process is consistent with prior years. The submission process begins in late September. There are hub meetings in January. The approval authority submits final approval of projects, and that's planned for March. And then the guidance document includes information on submission, criteria, the roles and responsibilities of all the participants, a summary timeline, and then an allowable spending guideline. And we absolutely welcome feedback and suggestions concerning this process. There are a few updates from previous years. Consistent with last year, we have tried to remain with a simplified proposal guidance document. The main document has basic information, and then there are some appendices. I do want to bring your attention to the national priority projects. In fiscal year 21, DHS increased the number of national priority projects from 4 priority projects to 5. They further increased the required allocation percentage of these projects from 20% to 30%. So for the purposes of the FY22 document, not knowing what the feds are going to do, we will use the existing 5 national priority projects and the 30% requirement, of course, again, as this is all subject to change by the federal government. Now, in terms of regional projects, because DHS continues to make changes to the application process, adding new national priority projects and increased funding allocations, we have eliminated the regional project section as a proposal option. Also, in response to the addition of the fifth national priority project, Cal OES again revised their list of homeland security goals. And so this document that you have contains that revision with a revised table indicating how our work groups align with our goals and in turn align with the state's homeland security goals. In addition, because the NICRIC and information sharing projects have been assigned to a national priority project, there's only one sustainment project that we are including, and that's the Regional Bay Area Training and Exercise Program. Core City funding allocation remains the same as in FY21. Now, hub projects. This is the new part for FY22. Beginning in FY22, hub project allocations are going to be moved to a two-year funding cycle. And the funding amount allocated to each hub will include double the amount that you received in FY21 funding, and it will be four grant years, FY22 and FY23. And we will include a cushion of 10% in case there are changes in the allocation amount that we end up receiving. So this reflects the previously used method by the UASI management team to determine the hub allocations, and the 10% cushion addresses the potential for funding amounts. So we'll be planning to work with all the hubs, but we're urging you to begin your planning early. So please take a look at pages 5 and 6 of the proposal guidance for more information. This calendar year, this year when we start doing this in September, it's probably going to be a little bit more challenging. But once we get rolling on this, I think it's going to prove to be beneficial for all agencies concerned. They will not have to submit multiple applications for projects that are never going to be funded. The above the line and below the line, will be basically eliminated. It will allow you all to perform better planning efforts for your jurisdictions and your hubs. In conclusion, we do distribute to multiple networks for this, but we are suggesting that you work with your various agencies if you want to reach out to them. As I said, internal vetting is going to be very important. We encourage you to undertake an internal vetting process. The proposal review approval authority members will be able to review their jurisdiction's proposals in November of this year after everything is submitted. And you'll have the option to remove or make changes as time passes. And again, the hub voting members are limited to 1 to 3. It should simplify the hub voting process significantly. And you are welcome to have as many people helping you and being observers, but the voting members remain at 1 to 3. And I'm happy to try to answer any questions that y'all might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary, that time again. Okay, I definitely see hands. Let me pull up here. So why don't we go, Jerry, I see you, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I would like to bring this up. I've spoken directly with Cal OES and Homeland Security. It seems to have fallen on deaf ears as an individual operational area. The national priorities, which are totally within their purview, and I totally accept that, are very restrictive when they are extended not only from the regional UASI, but down to the individual hubs. Many of the national priorities are regional in component and have a regional requirement. For example, cybersecurity. I personally feel that we, as the Bay Area UASIs, fulfill that requirement through the NCRIC and through the regional cybersecurity projects that we do as a Bay Area UASI. But the interpretation is that in addition to what we're doing on a regional basis, the individual hubs are required to do the same national priorities for all of their projects to include cybersecurity, which is almost impossible. And I would like the UASI to be our mouthpiece to not only the state, but to the National Homeland Security to object to this practice, because it makes it extremely restrictive for us to utilize that money. If that's going to be their posture, then I would propose and I'd be willing to support a motion to just give that percentage share of funding that we're supposed to have for these regional projects to the UASI for regional things like the NCRIC for cybersecurity. Thank you.
Thank you. And I see Chris Godley has his hand up too. Chris, do you want to make a comment?
Sure. It's actually following up with Gary's point about the national priorities and the sub requirements being passed down, I'm assuming in this case to the hubs. So, for example, if we're going to carve out the money for the fusion center, that would seem to me to satisfy the requirement for the national priority for enhancing information intelligence sharing, the 5%, so that the hubs aren't levied with a 5% requirement for that national priority. Is that going to be the case, or are we still going to have to spend 5% on that priority?
Yeah, Chris, this is Gary. I asked that specific question to not only CalES, but our Homeland Security rep, and they told us that as it stands right now, the individual hubs are required to fulfill all of those national priorities, regardless of what's done on a regional basis.
Yeah, but that doesn't make sense because the state's giving the award to the UASI. This is an internal mechanism we use at the hub level to allocate these funds. If the overall San Francisco UASI award does give 5% towards enhancing information sharing because we're getting to the Fusion Center, that would seem to satisfy the requirements of the grant. I can't see where the state is going to mandate the hubs also do the 5%. That's why I'm asking the question here for Mary and such.
I'm not sure I understand your question. We get a, and Craig, maybe you want to step in here and help
me. Let me address both questions. There's no obligation at the moment that the hubs satisfy the national priority projects. As long as we, out of our allocation, satisfy 30%, and that we are doing that so far by using the NCRIC. You're right. The NCRIC handles all the information and sharing projects as well as part of the cyber allocation requirements. This year, there were no allocations to the national priority projects from the hubs. We are trying to preserve that as much as possible by saying that any type of regional project that will be funded will have to go through the national priority project so that we preserve the integrity of the hubs. So right now, the hubs don't have that requirement, and we're not proposing that them to have that requirement at all. However, as Mary mentioned, you know, FEMA changes rules very quickly without giving adequate notice. Last year, they proposed having everything go through an effectiveness review, but they changed their mind due to a new administration, and they wanted to do a wait and see. So at this point, I'm not sure whether or not FEMA is going to continue the national priority process requirement or add other subject areas or decrease other subject areas. But what we can do is just plan accordingly as what they've done this year. And so for Gary and Chris, our intention is not to obligate the hubs to satisfy the requirements of the national priority allocations.
And if I could just speak for 1 minute, Gary and Chris, I put together the spreadsheet with all of the projects for FY21 that were already selected and approved by the approval authority. And in putting together the spreadsheet, there were projects, none of the hub projects were at all touched. They were all allocated to the other project item numbers. And so it was a seamless thing. The only thing we had to do was, instead of putting the NCRIC in one bucket, we put it in the national priority bucket. And then there were in projects, investment justifications number 1 through 5, we just filled in that those items. There was no change. There was no requirement for any of the hub projects. They all fit where they should fit. There was no issue, unless I'm missing one of your concerns. As Craig says, there's no change to the requirements. The hubs are still getting the same amount of money. If you want to do a cyber project for your hub, your individual hub, you certainly can do that, and we can put it into the national priority project bucket. It doesn't take away anything from you. If that's sort of what your question is, I'm not quite clear.
It's Chris, that works for me.
And Chris, that doesn't mean that at some point the feds won't decide that they want us to become more and more restrictive. That's the difficulty that we're all facing. They are becoming more restrictive in what they are asking of us, what they're demanding that we do, demanding how we put together everything. And our explanations, our descriptions, they're looking at everything more closely. So at some point we may have to come back to the board and say, hey, we need help here. But for last year and this year, like I said, I'm the person typing everything in. So I can tell you how it looked.
All right, if there's no more board comment, we'll move on to public comment.
Mr. Beekman, please unmute your microphone.
Hi, Blair Beekman here. Thank you for this item. It was incredibly informative. You guys are going to be going through changes in how we work the budgets and the national priority project ideas. The fact that you're going to now go through 2-year cycles instead of 3-year cycles and more, that is amazing. I mean, I was writing about this to yourselves 6 months ago. You're now working on it, or you are working on it. You know, it suggests that you were working on it when I was writing you 6 months ago. So thank you. I think it will offer ideas of openness and clarity and accountability. I think that is the goals we're trying to work towards. You know, it's of interest, these national priority ideas and how it can help the NCRIC process. Good luck in figuring out what can be good formulas. I know that Craig Zedzik's been trying to work on the idea of having a state fund set up for NCRIC COLA ideas. You know, to set up state funding for the NCRIC process in some ways, for federal dollars to go into, I mean, that's a possible option. I mean, you're at accounting choices at this time with the federal government. Good luck in what you can work out. You know, what you can't figure out now, you can figure out in time. I'm a little curious how There's after 2 years, there's a 10% pad for projects going overtime. Where does that 10% come from? That's a question for myself. Otherwise, good luck. You have a good start here. Thank you.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Adrienne Bekele, a deputy director for Department of Emergency Management, in for Chair Carroll, who had to momentarily step away. Mary, unless there's any other public comment, we can move to call for a motion to approve this action item.
I don't see any raised hands, Chair.
All right, may I have a motion to approve, please?
So moved, Monterey County.
Thank you. May I have a second?
Second, Eric Artisero, San Francisco.
Thank you very much. Sarah, will you please call roll?
Thank you. City and County of San Francisco.
Adrienne Bekele, aye.
County of Alameda.
Assistant Sheriff Madigan, aye.
City and County of San Francisco.
Eric Artisero, aye.
City of Oakland. City of San Jose.
Jay McCamus, aye.
County of Santa Clara.
Dana Reed, aye.
County of Contra Costa.
Tom Chalk, aye.
County of Marin.
Pierre Henkane, aye.
County of Monterey.
Gary Malay, aye.
County of San Mateo.
John Kovach, aye.
And County of Sonoma.
Chris Godley, aye.
Thank you. The motion passes with 11 ayes and one absent. Moving on to agenda item six, regional EOC information sharing program update.
Thank you, Sarah. Good morning, everybody. I'm Corinne Bartshire with the Bay Area UWASI. If you wouldn't mind moving forward to the agenda item, Sarah, thank you. As many of you recall, for the past several years, UWASI has allocated regional funds to supporting the operational areas with integrating local web EOC usage with the state's Cal EOC system through fused boards and technical assistance. This year, given changes in local processes, we have focused the regional effort on understanding and assessing the various situational assessment, common operating picture platforms that are in use throughout the Bay Area, and reviewing how we as a Bay Area region are developing a regional common operating picture. With that, I'll turn it over to Woody Baker-Cohn from Marin County. That agency is leading this project, and he can introduce himself and walk us through the details of the project.
Thanks, Corinne. Woody Baker-Cohn. It's good to see you, only virtually after all this time. I'm the Assistant Emergency Manager in Marin. We actually had somebody who worked for me, Dave Varela, working on this project. He's just taken a different job out of state, and we're expecting a backfill shortly. In the meantime, I'll keep the project moving and supplement as needed. This is, as Corinne mentioned, part of a series of projects. It had been primarily focused on WebUC, but really the larger purpose here is getting situational awareness, common operating picture, really awareness of what's going on around us into a better state than it's been. And it's been, we've kind of been doing this by layers. If I could get to the next slide, please. Thank you. So situational awareness, common operating picture, I think most people understand this. It's the ability to know what's going on in as close to real time as you can, and having it as the common operating picture. Everybody has a similar idea of what's going on, as opposed to I got a briefing 2 hours ago and somebody else got a briefing 5 minutes ago, so that we can respond as effectively and efficiently as possible. It's kind of a bunch of different levels within the county. Most counties have figured that out using whatever mechanisms work for them. Between adjacent counties, which is, you know, tends to be a greater level of detail because incidents tend to spill from county to county, within the region, which is what we're primarily talking about here, and then statewide. And then it's county to county and really counties to the state. And there have been, you know, many, many problems trying to get that going. It needs to be timely organized in a way that people can quickly assimilate the needed information and so forth. So that's what we're working on. We've done this in a smaller way a couple of years ago, and we're able to get quite a bit of progress using WebUC systems and non-WebUC implementation. Unfortunately, we didn't have great state engagement at a level at which people could make decisions. So we're trying to work on that this year. So as Corinne mentioned, what we're doing is we're going to assess what systems people are using, what information they need, get to a point where we can settle on an agreed set of essential elements of information. So what are the common questions we need to know to get situational awareness? There's some obvious things like, is power out? Are the roads open? Is transportation working? Is you know, things like that. So working through that, what we're going to do is this depicted here. We've got a survey going out to Bay Area jurisdictions. We'll compile the data so we're better able to equip going forward. What kind of data do people have now? What kind of systems are you using? What works? What doesn't work? And then we're going to, with working group, you know, work through details of how to get to a solution around that. And important to this will be including the state. I've been working, I sit on the SIMS advisory board, which sets policy at a state level. So trying to get, you know, engagement at the state level on consistent EEIs and things like that. And then really develop what we do to close those gaps within the region. And then ideally that will go to the rest of the state. And I think there's a particular hunger for this, you know, an efficient process after years of fires and now COVID. It's really become quite clear the shortcomings in the approach we use, which is both technical and then just sort of procedural. Often Cal OES, for instance, collects situational awareness through conference calls, which for some things is necessary in a dynamic incident, but much of the information really is rote and known in advance. So being able to improve that. There's quite a bit of that we can do within WebUC. We've got at this point, I believe 9 of the UWASI jurisdictions are using WebUC. I know San Francisco's recently dropped it. Sonoma's picked it up. But other people are using different systems. Some of the WebUC systems are used less than others. And there's some, you know, quite a bit of new technology out there and lessons learned. So we're going to move this forward, I think, quite a bit this year. And we're going to get to a point where we can test it out in Golden Eagle. Likely we'll have components of this we can test out later as we get into the fire season, things like that. So really just getting to a point where we've got good, high quality, efficient, common operating picture that can be shared amongst the jurisdictions within the Bay Area, but also beyond. Other than that, you know, really just, you know, continuation of what we've been doing. Some of this can also spill out to public systems and RIM. We're using using systems to drive greater public awareness so people see what's been evacuated, where the evacuation routes are, and the PSPS, what drugstores were open. So it has applicability just beyond the immediate emergency management. So that, any questions?
All right, at this time, we will take comments from the board. Let's see, Gary, I see you.
Yeah, hi, thank you, Adrian. Corinne, this is for you as the program manager, and I apologize for not having this knowledge already, but since the regional programs are no longer going to be allocated separate funding by the board, is this program just being funded by the UWASI management budget?
This was a fiscal year 20 allocation that we're working through this year, and there is a fiscal year 21 allocation. So it's prior regional project allocations.
Okay, got it.
But starting with fiscal year 2022, there won't be regional allocations.
Thank you.
Sure.
I see no other hands from members of the board at this time. Any other comments from members of the board? Okay, we will move to general public comment on this. Mary, can you please call public comment?
Yes, Mr. Beekman, unmute your mic and go ahead, please.
Hi, thank you. Blair Beekman here. Just a thank you again for the last item. I'm very impressed how you can offer a sense of accountability to the local level with your budgeting ideas. Good luck in how to address its restrictive ideas and make it an accountable process for all of us in the future. Good luck on those efforts. For this item, I just wanted to try to quickly remind, you know, in working new T&E programs that, you know, the importance of emergency services, and that I think in the past few years we rededicated Bayuasi and made commitments towards emergency services planning and the importance of that. And just to have that perspective, it seems important just to mention it this time and what we really could be focusing on and what we should be focusing on for our future, which is hopeful in terms of we work towards our better sustainable ideas and good democracy and openness and that one for all for one, one for all spirit and organization. I think that's our future. And hopefully we can learn to set aside our past of what 9/11 was and the obvious mistakes that 9/11 was about. And it's time we really start moving towards a new future idea and thinking. And we're doing that now, and that is through the ideas of emergency services and the like. And we're doing that. And I just wanted to remind ourselves here. And thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Unless there's any additional public comment, or unless I'm mistaken, this was a discussion item. So unless there's anything else, we can move on to agenda item number 7, please.
We've done a bit of a...
Thanks, Adrian. Break. This is Corinne Bartshire again.
And I'd say there's...
I'm happy to give the update on the Bay Area Training and Exercise Program. Thank you, Sarah. Stay there just 1 minute. As you may all recall, we launched the Bay Area Training and Exercise Program course deliveries 1 year ago in June 2020. All of those courses last year were virtual. And then in January, we were able to begin conducting critical in-person trainings on a case-by-case basis following COVID-19 safety protocols. Thankfully, we are now able to do more in-person trainings, continuing to follow COVID safety protocols, of course, and look forward to continued success through the remainder of this year. In this briefing, we have some statistics of our training accomplishments from January through mid-May. So, Sarah, if you wouldn't mind bringing us into the slide presentation. We've displayed these statistics a few different ways. Next slide, please, Sarah. Since the start of this year, we have delivered more than 33 courses because this data is as of May 16th, and almost 600 students trained, et cetera. We're getting new accounts onto baytep.org and continuing to promote the program and get our training activities rolling. So if you would go to the next slide, we don't need to talk through each of these, but you can see we've broken out the different information by discipline, number of courses, number of students. Next slide. We're continuing to get great feedback for the instructors and the courses across all of our disciplines. You can see some great comments here from fire and emergency management, and on the next slide, law enforcement, and more emergency management comments. So one exciting thing here is you may have seen this in the news, and I understand an Alameda County Sheriff's Sergeant defused a standoff situation at the Oakland Airport by using de-escalation tactics that he learned during trainings provided by the UASI Training and Exercise Program. And I understand it's over a course of several years. This program has, you know, been in place since 2011. So kudos to UASI and the investments
Sounds like this sergeant was very crafty in figuring out how to distract the individual by turning on the air conditioning and able to defuse the incident. So you can see here the sergeant credits SWAT and hostage negotiation training that he received through the UOSI's training and exercise program. So that's always exciting to see. Next slide, Sarah. New this year, we are getting ready for a public safety preparedness summit. And through the Bay Area Training and Exercise Program, we are integrating our key exercises, the Golden Eagle exercise, the mass notification seminar, and the drills being conducted through the Securing the Cities in a wonderful event that hopefully we can all come together in person in November. We have secured the Hyatt Regency Hotel in San Francisco as the venue. It's right by the Embarcadero. So please save the dates of November 3rd through 5th. And we're looking forward to this inaugural summit and hoping that we can continue doing this as an annual capstone event for the Bay Area Training and Exercise Program's annual exercises. So on November 3rd, the Golden Eagle exercise, I'll talk about that a little bit more in detail. And then, and that will happen at the various agencies that are participating, the different EOCs, transit agencies, et cetera. But November 4th and 5th is when the mass notification seminar, and we'll have some other speakers and panel sessions happening concurrently as well. So it'll be sort of a conference environment at the Hyatt on the November 4th and 5th. We do have government rate room block set up. So if you're planning to spend a few days with us there in San Francisco, you can reserve a room right at the Hyatt for the government rate. Next slide, Sarah. I wanted to just brief a little bit on the Golden Eagle exercise. This is our multidiscipline regional coordination exercise, you know, based in emergency management, an opportunity for all of our operational areas to exercise simultaneously, practice the region coordination. We have Cal OES and Caltrans and other state and federal agencies on board to exercise with us on November 3rd. This year's focus areas are critical transportation and logistics for the life-sustaining commodity distribution that brings in our Regional Catastrophic Preparedness Grant Program, RCPGP, investments into this exercise opportunity. And we're doing a lot of training and capability building aligned with these focus areas. So on our website, baytep.org, you can access the different training opportunities. And of course, if your agency isn't plugged into the Golden Eagle exercise planning, let me know and we can certainly set you up so that you can get what you want out of this regional exercise opportunity. And then next slide, Sarah. This is a summary of the different components that are in the Golden Eagle exercise, and it is customizable. All the different agencies that are playing are picking and choosing which pieces they want to exercise. Of course, the EOC operations for critical transportation is the main focus, but we have jurisdictions that are exercising alert and warning systems. As a region, we want to look at common operating picture and how we're creating that together as a region. Some jurisdictions are integrating community preparedness, et cetera. We will have a few full-scale commodity points of distribution sites in action during the exercise. And then, of course, the Bay Area Joint Information System will be exercising with the PIOs, public information officers, around the region. And that group is working through updates based on their activation over the past year due to the COVID response. And so this will be an opportunity to exercise revisions to their structure and how they want to make improvements going forward based on the COVID lessons learned. So next slide, Sarah. In closing, I just want to a couple of announcements about the BATEP program. We will be issuing a request for qualifications for an expanded pool of training and exercise vendors. We're moving the procurement of the training and exercises in-house by the UAC management team hosted by City and County of San Francisco. So that RFQ will come out later this year. As we go through the program, we're adapting to the post-COVID training environment, looking forward to the new safety protocols that come out from the state and what each of the local agencies adopt as COVID safety protocols. And we'll flex our program and make sure that we're doing everything safely. And most importantly, we want to listen to all of you and the folks who are participating in our trainings to make sure that we are offering what is needed for the region. And we'll continue coordinating across programs within the UAC, RCP, GP, STC, TVTP, all the alphabet soup. We are coordinating across all of the programs to make sure that we can offer capabilities that are needed for exercises coming up or certifications, professional development that our stakeholders are interested in. So with that, I think there might be a contact slide, but I'll answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Corinne. We're really looking forward to early November, and all the planning that's leading up to this is huge for the entire region. So much appreciated. Any questions or comments from members of the board? Okay, seeing none, Mary, will you please call public comment?
Yes, Mr. Beekman, unmute your mic and go ahead, please.
Hi, thank you, Blair Beekman. There was a lot of a bit of clanging and noise on the last item. To try to speak again what I was trying to say, this is a time we can really reassess what we were doing with ourselves. There was the incidents of 9/11. There was COVID issues. I think in the past few years, Bay UASI, we've been trying to really figure out what can be our sustainable future and what are sustainable ideas. And to have a good perspective of emergency services work, it's important at this time. And we're learning how to develop that. And the COVID has obviously knocked us back a lot. I think we've been trying to build something incredibly hopeful and positive and democratic and peaceful for our future. And it's those kind of ideals that we end this era of COVID and really ask our future that we don't do this to ourselves in the future. And we ask our governments at the national level to start to develop more humane, safer practices. And it's our examples that we're doing here at the local level that can give our national governments those good examples. So good luck in continuing the ideas of perspective and placing emergency services over T&E and knowing the importance of T&E compared to emergency services and other programs that we're building in Bay UASI at this time. Thank you.
All right. I do not see any additional public comment. And since this is a discussion item, we can move on to agenda item number 8, please.
Great. Good morning. If you want to advance a slide. All right. So thank you for this opportunity to provide an update to what we've accomplished since I last presented in January on the risk management program. This is another discussion item, so no vote is needed. When I'm finished, I will introduce Jason Carroll from Haystacks to talk about some of the situational awareness features available in CalCOP. Next slide, please. I can go that one. So here's what we've done. We held the risk management kickoff and a virtual CalCOP training at the beginning of the year. We completed the asset update last month, and I'll talk about that in a minute. We worked with the subject matter experts to add some new scenarios to the THIRA, so pandemic, improvised nuclear device scenario, and we updated the radiological dispersal device scenario impacts.
And now we're in the process of gathering input for the capability assessment of the process, which is the SPR stakeholder preparedness review. Next slide, please. Great. So let's see, the NCRIC this year updated the pharmaceutical sector, including dialysis centers, and that added 1,333 new assets to the CalCOP infrastructure database. Each asset record includes facility information, such as whether the COVID vaccine is provided on site, as well as a link to new assets. There was no change to the relative hub asset risk percentage for 2021 due to these updates, because the assets that were added this year were spread fairly evenly throughout the regions. Next slide, please. And on this slide, you will see the asset risk by county. So there were no changes, as I said, to the first two decimal points, so the asset risk percentage remains constant. Next slide. All right, so what's left to do? We're currently in the process of gathering input for the required capability targets to complete the stakeholder preparedness review. That's the assessment portion of the THIRA process. And we're doing this via virtual meetings with our subject matter experts. We just held the community resilience session yesterday. I think it was had maybe the broadest participation regionally, and maybe the most participants we've had so far when we haven't done these through an emergency management work group meeting or a work group meeting. So that was quite a success. And then one thing I forgot to add on this slide is that in July 1st will be the deadline for adding anticipated special events for 2022 into CalCOP. For the DHS special events data call that NCRIC does for us every year. And so we'll be reaching out again to each of your jurisdiction points of contact with information about this process and how to add that information into CalCOP. We're also going to continue to work on metrics and measures to better demonstrate return on investment through our regional projects. In November, we present the THIRA and SPR for your approval before submission to FEMA in December. And that's also the meeting where I present the hub funding formula, which is derived from our asset risk, population data, and economic data. And now I will turn it over to Jason Carroll from HACEX, and he'll talk about CalCOP situational awareness features, and those are available to every UWASI jurisdiction. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy, and thanks everyone for having me. So just wanted to update you on a few things on the California Common Operating Picture for Threat Awareness, or CalCOP, your Bay Area Risk Management and Risk Analysis Tool. Sarah, if you could move to the next slide. So as a reminder, this is a cloud-based data sharing platform that you can access from anywhere, whether it's from your mobile device or from your desktop. And today I'll be focusing on, as Amy said, I'll be focusing on the new and updated awareness features and real-time incident management features that are available to you through the statewide contract. And so these are available to urban areas, state agencies, and to fusion centers as well. Next slide. So you can see some of the core use cases And the foundation of that being the assets and assessments with the threat information to help create a regional situational awareness picture. And I will talk about in more detail in the next slide on some of these applications. So, Sarah, if you can move to the CalCOP key benefits slide. So some of the key benefits. It allows you to securely share information in real time across disciplines and jurisdictions by integrating feeds from multiple systems and allows you to see the context of all those different feeds to each other of how that threat information relates to each other without having to log into multiple systems until you really need to dive deep down. And if you can move to the CalCOP application slide, please. So you can see here the main applications that are available in the software. As I mentioned earlier, the foundation of that being the assets and assessments. We have over 15,000 assets cataloged in the Bay Area, including those assets that Amy just updated on. And under the assessments, you have multiple assessment types that are available to you. And those include vulnerability assessments, fire pre-incident assessments, school safety, and tactical assessments. We have developed over the last year and implemented an assessment template builder to support custom assessments based on your needs and requirements. These assessments can be long or short, and users are able to create their own assessment templates, and some of our clients in Florida and Texas have already been using this new tool, and we'll highlight some of the, I'll highlight some of those use cases in the next slide as well. But also, the special events template has been, as Amy mentioned, has been updated to make sure to capture all of these DHS special events data call requirements. And then on the threat streams, we continue to add real-time and open source and proprietary feeds like 311 CAD and WebEOC. So if you have any feeds that you would like to add, we can add those. We already have some from the Santa Clara Valley Regional Interoperability Authority, as well as Alameda County and Contra Costa County. And then finally, with the map, being able to layer all of that together so you can see that data in context in relation to each other geospatially. All right, last slide, Sarah, CalCOP recent use cases. So some of these use cases that you see here, we will be writing up lessons learned and best practices and posting those on the calcop.org website. Making sure that you have access to those. So if there's something that you're interested in, you can reach out to us and we can help implement those use cases in your area. As I mentioned earlier, some of our nationwide clients are already taking advantage of our template builder. And Houston has created a quick assessment that asks questions for specific asset types in order to quickly assess these key assets and get updates on the operational status of their site and recommendations for mitigating vulnerabilities, as well as being able to rate those facilities as well. So you can see a few examples of those types of assessments. And then in Tampa, during the pandemic, they were able to use the assessment template builder to create a process for assessing their pod sites that have been used for testing and vaccinations, and this really helped them better monitor the readiness and the use of the sites. And then down in Dallas, they have been using the Field Reporter for extensive daily operations deployment across the city and across multiple discipline groups, really being able to improve their situational awareness. And then finally, we are working with the NCRIC and with the public health stakeholders to implement a drug seizure notifications use case using the Field Reporter to help better inform the public health stakeholders in order to help better prepare them to be able to respond to surges in cases of overdoses and withdrawals when those narcotics are taken off the street. Please let us know if there's anything we can help to do to implement new use cases for you and help meet your needs. And like I said, we will be posting more of these best practices on calcop.org in the coming weeks and months. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Amy and Jason. Very helpful. Any comments from the board or questions for Amy or Jason? All right, Mary, can you move to public comment, please?
Sure. Mr. Beekman, you may unmute your microphone and begin speaking.
Hi, Blair Beekman here. I'm going to sit up here. There was mention of haystacks with FIRA things. I don't know if I heard that correctly. And that kind of set a few alarms up for myself. And a reminder just that, you know, with all the PVE, CVE, and FIRA stuff that you're going to be worried about at this time,
I guess, you know, you will be involving haystacks more. And your description of haystacks in the last part of this item, how haystacks can be a part of the last part of the item, was interesting to myself. It was nice to learn about that. I, as always, working towards open public policy ideas, if there can be ways to address open public policy with the FERA issues and the use of haystack, I don't know if that's quite applicable, but I guess just a reminder to always be looking for options towards open public policy with the haystack. And, you know, with internalized data collection things and surveillance, you know, there's things like, you know, there's good ways to for data collection to take place and that don't necessarily, like, discriminate so much. You know, there's different, I can't remember the term right now, but, you know, there's different new ways to talk about what's called predictive policing isn't always such a prize, basically. I mean, you have to be very careful how you consider predictive policing ideas and what that can mean and in its data collection. And to be aware of those things, to ask for the help of, say, the ACLU and CAIR at this time about such issues is just an extra added sense of protection and way good ways to work that may be needed for this item and can help in better defining the civil rights and civil protection practices within data collection and surveillance that's needed for this sort of work. And I thought it'd be important to mention it at this time. And thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. With this, we will move on to our next agenda item. Agenda item number 9, please.
Sorry, I was talking on mute. Thank you all. Great to be here again today. My name is Corey Reynolds. I'm the general manager of the BayRICS, the Bay Area Regional Interoperable Communication System Authority. And today I'm just going to give you a quick briefing on the regional activities at BayRICS, our coordination and our continued work with FirstNet, and then on some national policy changes that we're tracking. Biggest piece here, since we last spoke, we have kind of divided up our work group into two separate groups. So now we have two groups advising BayRICS, the Radio Operators Advisory Group, really focused on land mobile radio interoperability, our P25 systems, the programming and coordination that's required for both day-to-day public safety operations as well as catastrophic emergencies. And then we have split off a focused work group on broadband, which I'll get to in just a second. So on the LMR side, our radio operators have been super busy working with me on an update to our tactical interoperable communications plan, as well as the testing and validation and continued updates of a mobile application. You can see a couple of the screenshots there. So that work, the app is ready, though, you know, with any plan like this, as soon as you put data in, other data is old and stale, so we're figuring out processes to keep it updated. We're hosting our regional system key exchange next week, our first in-person meeting since COVID, so really looking forward to that. Again, each year we get together in Dublin and share programming keys for each other's radio systems in order to foster kind of that ad hoc or quick interoperability. Our group continues to monitor and share lessons on implementing the new California DOJ encryption requirements. And we coordinate closely with the Bay Area Training and Exercise Program to ensure that communications is an objective of the Golden Eagle exercise that Corinne briefed on, as well as making sure that the training needs of our communications officials and technicians are met through the program. Next slide, please. On public safety broadband, there we go. Our public safety broadband work group kicked off. Our next meeting is 2 weeks from today. We plan to meet quarterly. This group of stakeholders across the region is pulled together to help us enhance regional coordination on broadband technologies and networks, whether those are cellular private networks, as you see on the slide, or leveraging government public infrastructure for public safety related traffic. In order to do any of that, of course, we need regional policy and governance, which that group oversees, coordinate on interoperability concerns. And then again, as communications evolves, so do training needs. So working closely with that group in coordination with BATEP to bring those new state-of-the-art trainings to the region. Next slide. Each of my updates also includes a quick update on FirstNet and its progress. For this quarter, I just wanted to highlight a couple new features that FirstNet has launched. First of all, the FirstNet network is now 5G capable. So in about 38 cities right now, FirstNet customers now have access to 5G spectrum. San Francisco is one of those cities, so we'll be curious to share lessons learned on any improvements that are seen by public safety. FirstNet is also enhancing their encryption, making it tower to core, or basically from the beginning of the traffic to the end, full end-to-end encryption. That's been implemented in two cities so far, and in Houston and Cleveland, and then should be deployed nationwide by the end of next year. Offering high-powered user equipment, which really helps rural areas especially close some coverage gaps. There is now Z access or vertical access location-based services enabled in FirstNet. Incident commanders and others can have a better feel of where within a building vertically a device or a responder is. And then the introduction of LMR interoperability with FirstNet Push-to-Talk. Again, an early solution that I think we're all still kind of testing and figuring out. And then on the right there, you can see just, my regular update on progress of the network. Next slide. The last thing I wanted to cover today, I won't go into all of this, a bit of a teaser. If you're interested in a deeper dive, the BayRix board is meeting today at 12:30, and we'll talk about this in more depth. But I did want to just point to a few congressional actions and FCC actions or considerations that could affect our regional public safety interoperability systems. Mostly in a positive way with the introduction of additional funding mechanisms through the American Rescue Plan Act. That's the $1.9 trillion act signed by Congress or signed into law March 11th. There are carve-outs or eligible expenses for public safety communications related costs. So BayRix is working with our partners at the National Association of Telecommunications Officials to pull together a cheat sheet or a briefing on implications to our stakeholders of some of these additional funding mechanisms, including the potential for other COVID stimulus dollars or others. I will also note, after I did these slides, DHS CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, has released a new resource that outlines all of the available new grant mechanisms and other funding mechanisms available to states and locals for communications investments. So again, as part of our the briefing we're working on, we will certainly include that. There also have been, there's been a lot of motion at the FCC as well. First of all, the T-band has been, we've talked about this in the past, but when creating FirstNet, the law also required an auction of T-band spectrum, which many public safety entities were using T-band spectrum for their LMR systems. The good news is that piece of the law has been repealed, and T-band users can continue to stay on that spectrum. We're also tracking rulemaking in the 4.9 gigahertz and in the 6 gigahertz spectrum, because both of those could impact or cause interference with potentially some of our public safety systems. So we continue to monitor that and make sure our voice is heard at the FCC. Again, we'll go into more detail on this at the Bay Rigs board meeting, and I will be sure to share the cheat sheet briefing that we pulled together. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thanks a lot, Corey. Any questions from members of the board? Okay, seeing and hearing none. Mary, can you call public comment, please?
Sure. Mr. Beekman, please unmute your mic and begin speaking. Thank you.
Hi, thank you. Blair Beekman here. I spoke a bit on this item earlier. I think, you know, Bayuasi, they had a meeting maybe in 2017 or 18 or so about, there was a company from Texas. There was a woman presenter who described that there can be ways to develop a broadband highway system, she called it, for the public in the times of emergency. And it's figuring out how to do that. I hope you're following up with that person. I always try to follow up with this issue at the local level. And I know that the Verizon has developed in San Jose, Santa Clara County area, kind of a patchwork system, I think, is how to describe it, that can provide some service in times of emergency to local people, to everyday community. But I don't know how guaranteed that system is or how reliable or, you know, and is it contingent is important for Bayuasi to help better develop those sort of programs. I had the interesting idea with the explanation of 6G and 4.9G that maybe you can develop some sort of gate system that allows the public use and access of, say, a 4.5G channel in the time of emergency and doesn't at other times. And I don't know, just an idea to throw out there. So thanks for this item. Overall, congratulations that Bay Rigs is finally here. And I guess that's about all. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Seeing no additional public comment, we can move to agenda item number 10, please.
All right, and I take it we're ready to go. So I'm Mike Senna. I want to thank everybody for giving us the time and especially the support for what we do on our cyber efforts. Recently, we've had some major cyber incidents that have impacted us on a national scale. And to better describe kind of what we're doing and how we're dealing with, you know, threats in our region and some of the incidents that have, really impacted our nation's critical infrastructure, I have Allison Yacabe, who's one of our lead analysts and experts nationally, that is going to kind of describe some of the things that we're doing locally. And thanks to all of your support that makes that possible. So, Allison, I'll pass it over to you.
Thank you, Director Senna. Good morning, Madam Chair, board members, and guests. I'm Allison Yacabe, lead cyber analyst at the NCRIC. I'm going to talk about two incidents that we've seen nationally and how we've also seen the same tactics used locally. So we talk about what's the value of a regional center? Well, we're pulling up these incidents that are almost, they're using the exact same tactics, techniques, and procedures that we're seeing nationally to prevent further harm. So at the NCRIC, we've been exercising cyber incidents that have physical impact. That's always the concern, that a cyber tactic would brick a system, would brick something that moves. And we saw that happen in February with the Oldsmar water treatment plant. A threat actor exploited an old Windows 7 machine, so it's end of life, not supported, and a shared TeamViewer account used by every employee within an organization. So they had the same username and password. That's generally bad practice. So the threat actor had a pretty easy time getting into this water treatment facility and increased the level of lye in the water. So that's bad health effects. The other bad thing is that it was 2 days before the Super Bowl and 15 miles away from the Super Bowl. So the good news there is that the NCRIC would have been on top of that because we do special event support. We do those pre-event plans. And so we would already be in communication as evidenced by our Super Bowl 50 response. The other incident that we had locally, that the timing was almost exact. It occurred 15 days prior, and it was a water treatment facility in the East Bay. Again, same shared user account among all employees, and it wasn't affecting a physical system. The threat actor deleted critical software that could be used to change chemical levels in the water. So if you can't change chemical levels, that's almost the same thing as increasing them or causing harm. And the NCRIC was on top of that incident. We got requests from the Water ISAC, the Water Information Sharing and Analysis Center, keen interest, because those tactics and techniques match. And we were able to pass it to a federal agency because it was so sophisticated. They made it look almost exactly like an insider and a cyber insider. So the NCRIC involvement in that incident, we were able to get the victim in touch with federal resources. A lot of times victims say, oh, of course, we've contacted these federal partners, but they do that for media. They haven't actually, and they need help. So that's what the NCRIC can do. The second incident occurred in May. That's the DarkSide ransomware incident affecting Colonial Pipeline on the East Coast. And again, with that one, it wasn't actually a physical, a cyber attack causing a physical response. It was the IT department proactively shutting down physical systems that caused that gas shortage, that caused the fuel shortages that we saw. So the threat actor, again, they were exploiting a shared remote access program among systems and was able to achieve access that way and then escalate privileges. So IT shut down their distribution as a proactive measure because you never want a cyber incident to pass from your information technology to your operations technology. When I'm talking about operations technology, those are the systems, the legacy systems, things that were designed in the 80s, in the 90s, that can't be updated. They have no defenses and they have no logging capability. So you can't find a threat actor once they're in. But that's what we're talking about, information technology versus operation technology. They should be separate. And with DarkSide, the ransomware, it wasn't affecting the distribution. That was a proactive response. The interesting thing here was that the NCRIC received a lot of requests for what's the word? Like it's the fog of war, right? We're trying to reduce fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Like, how is this incident going to affect us locally? The NCRIC cyber team, we spoke to industry groups. We spoke to community groups affecting the water, natural gas, oil and gas, and chemical sectors. So really trying to get the message out that, yes, this was a ransomware incident. It was really bad for supply. However, these are the infection vectors that are actually pretty simple to minimize the opportunity for a threat actor. So the good thing there is that the NCRIC cyber team offers vulnerability assessments in concert with our risk management team. So those folks that you guys know so well that do infrastructure protection, we work with them. We go out with them to do those vulnerability assessments. While they're looking at physical things, we're looking at cyber things. So that's been a good synergy for us so far. Another cool thing we're doing is getting involved with crime prevention units. So if we're out there protecting end users, we're also reducing fear, uncertainty, and doubt and giving them the connections they need to report incidents as they come in. So really improving resilience for the region that way. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Allison and Mike. Are there any comments or questions from members of the board? Okay, seeing none, we'll move. Oh, yes, please. Sorry.
Couldn't unmute. Hi, Allison. One of the things that was
quite profound is when they announced on that cyber breach in the oil pipeline that the I'm not sure if it was the FBI or NSA or whatever, they were actually able to recover the ransom money that was paid. And that seems to me to be a critical component to stopping. Obviously, you know, if we have that ability, is that something that is at a higher federal level, or is that something that the NCRIC can be involved in? Thank you.
Yes. On all counts. So the NCRIC and federal agencies never want you to pay the ransom. But in this case, we think it actually helped FBI to get more traction to find the threat actor. In terms of recovery, NCRIC does that. We do that for business email account compromise. There's something called the financial fraud kill chain. So if you report high dollar loss to us over electronic means, we have federal partners we can work with to get those funds recovered. Again, with ransomware, I mean, we never encourage you to pay that. And I would never assume that it's coming back to you. And I don't think Colonial Pipeline did it either. But we could certainly get you in touch with the resources to explore those options, especially if you're interested in finding the bad guy and maybe like pulling the chain to see if you can interact with them more.
Yeah, the only thing I want to add, the key element to that is timing. We need immediate notifications as quickly as possible before funds are transferred to a location that we will not be able to access. So the timing of the reporting is critical for any instance where money may have been wire transferred or sent electronically to be able to make that a successful retrieval of those funds.
Thank you, everyone. Any additional questions or comments from the board? Okay, we will move to public comment. Mary, will you call it, please?
Sure. Mr. Beekman, go ahead, please.
Hi, thank you. Blair Beekman here. That was a really, really interesting item. It was really presented interestingly. It was different than usual. Thank you. You know, we're at a fever pitch with cybersecurity issues at this time. And it's always said, you know, we just got to lock down and make sure we have good security. And, you know, that isn't always the best tactic. I mean, it just drilled into our heads. But there is a real serious world going on that's trying to develop open public policies with the future of cybersecurity. And within cybersecurity, how there can be actually a more shared process. And, you know, look into its works. There's a whole new field of developing of what cybersecurity can be. And it isn't just, you know, let's just lock down everything that the media is presenting ourselves at this time. And that local officials and politicians are speaking that language as well. There is an open system that, as you're developing new programs and ideas, that an important component of all of that is then to explain that to the everyday public. And that's part of the strategy to address the future of cybersecurity issues. Get the public involved. Don't just say, you know, we're locking everything up and locking everyone out. You know, it's much more than that. And it needs to learn to be described. What was described here was really interesting as well, and I think you're addressing the fog of war, which is awesome. It's exactly what I'm trying to be doing, is how to invite open public policies to address clarity. And it invites the hackers themselves to reassess what they're doing, because we're working towards a good democratic future. And if that's...
Mr. Beekman, are you still speaking? We can't hear you.
Thanks.
All right, that it looks like that concludes our public comment. So now we can move to agenda item 11. Tristan, please.
Good morning, everyone. Such interesting topics this morning, especially the last one from NCRIC. Now on to my not so interesting agenda item. So this agenda item is for discussion only. This report is presented to you pursuant to the UIC Approval Authority bylaws. The reallocation requests that have been approved in the last 7 months came from our core cities. Oakland repurposed its stockpile project and made it as part of their operational communication project. San Jose, due to its COVID activation, gathered some salary savings and reallocated those funds to the FirstNet connectivity project, while San Francisco reallocated some small leftover funds to their cybersecurity project. I'm also taking this opportunity to let our jurisdiction know that we are pivoting to desk review in lieu of our yearly on-site monitoring due to obvious reason, similar to what we've done last year. You should receive some formal notification in the coming weeks about the specific steps our team is taking with regards to this desk review. That's all I have, and happy to answer any questions you have.
Tristan gets the prize today. All right. Any questions from members of the board or comments on Tristan's quick presentation? All right. We will move to public comment for this item. Mary, can you call it, please?
Sure. Mr. Beekman, go ahead, please.
Hi, guys. Blair Beekman here. I mean, that was a very classic example on the previous item. I don't know exactly when it cut off my speaking. Hopefully, I was able to speak for about two and a half minutes, and you got most of my words. Hopefully, you can describe to myself at the end of the item, my public comment, how much time was cut off. But I think it's an example that I think I simply just gave it my best on that last item. It was a bit critical, but overall, it was incredibly constructive and positive. I'm talking about the future of cybersecurity. I suppose it fits in with this item as well as Tristan was talking about cybersecurity issues. To try to conclude my words, we're at a time that I think we're understanding what can be open public policy ideas so well at this time that, you know, these are good democratic practices that we start to ask the hackers themselves, you know, that this is the good stuff we're working on and that it's from this. They need to reassess why exactly they're hacking in the first place, because we're trying to develop such a decent future of open democratic practices and good stuff that it asks the hackers to reassess what they're doing. That's what all I was saying. And I don't know why it cut me off. I think it's something to really question as we are building our future in your CVE at this time, to conclude that, you know, who is being watched? Who is being surveilled? And why are they being surveilled? Why was I being cut off? You know, and those, we have to really ask those questions with the CVE and PVE issues at this time. You have to really learn how to refine that process. I'm being cut off here because my words are too strong. Is that a problem? Is that an issue? Can someone mute themselves right now as I conclude here? My intentions are incredibly decent here, and that's not being respected. Why is that? And that needs to be addressed very seriously. Thank you.
Thank you very much. With the conclusion of this agenda item, we will move to number 12, which is just general announcements for the good of the order. Can we go through members of the board for any general announcements or from the UIC management team, please? I see Jody Trevisero, your hand's up. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have one item to announce for the good of the order, and that is we have established a training program for the Bay Area UIC Targeted Violence and Terrorism Prevention Program. That means four training classes have been posted on the Bay Area UIC website. The address of the website is bayareauasi.org/TVTP. We just wanted to make sure that you were aware of this, and we're grateful for all of our support across the approval authority for getting the word out.
Thank you very much, Jody. Any other announcements from members of the board or the management team of UIC? All right, we will move to agenda item number 13, general public comment. Mary, can you call it, please? Mr. Beekman, go ahead, please.
Hi, thank you. Blair Beekman here. I guess as usual, what I'm trying to learn as usual at this time is that thanks for the meeting. It was a good meeting. If we can learn to consider the name of the Bayuasi itself and the possibility that we can change the name and we can change it to a name that is of more U.S. democratic ideals and values and understandings and history. I think we should work towards that sort of name. Bayuasi has some could have some implications that are not too pleasant, and that is from a time of European use that I don't think we need to be a part of, basically. But it's supposed to remind ourselves that we're supposed to do our good practices and things. I think we can do better than that and work towards a sustainable U.S. American democracy sort of name. I shouldn't say the word American so much, but a U.S. democracy sort of name and understanding. And I like the North American component of Golden Eagle, I suppose, but what about the California Condor? That's an important health bird of much health and importance to California culture and North American culture as well, just to remind. With all that said, thanks again for the meeting. And just a reminder, the cybersecurity issues are important to myself. How we talk about CVE and PVE, why did I possibly get censored a few minutes ago when I didn't have to be? You know, I was speaking of really good things. That's the kind of things you have to be aware about in the future of the CVE program. People are just going about doing their things a little rough around the edges. Be careful how you move forward. I mean, don't be attacking people who I am voicing something incredibly decent and positive and perhaps a little rough around the edges. But besides that, I'm doing my decent service. I shouldn't be censored for that. And we need to learn how to be open to listen and understand incredibly truthful point of views that are trying to come through to register to yourselves so you can better understand and work on issues. This is not a time to sit back in bureaucratic propriety and that things have to be spoken in only a certain way. We have to learn to work past that, trust when people are offering their decency and their good, as I'm trying to do, and that's how we need to learn how to work better for our future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And the last hand I see here is Jay McGamis. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much. Before we adjourn, I would just like to ask that we observe a moment of silence for those lives lost due to the senseless shooting event that occurred at Valley Transit Authority facility on 26 May. So if we could just take a few moments. Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much. What a wonderful way to close this meeting in that time of reflection. I appreciate that. All right, hearing no other general public comment or announcements for the good of the order, I am moving to adjourn this meeting. See you all at our next one. Thank you very much to the management team and to all of our presenters today, as well as our members of the public for public comment. And see you soon.